Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the official Leeds United podcast with me, Matthew Lewis, and of course, as ever, Michael Bridges. How are you doing?
I'm very well, Matt, thank you. I think I'm a little bit more lively than you are, pal. I believe you've been up in all hours. Is that watching clips of Leeds United or what you had on?
No, not quite. I've got a job, Bridgie. So I've just had a bit of a I've got a job. So I've just been doing a read through this morning over Zoom, which is weird. So I was up at like 4:30 because they're all in the UK, so I had to do a Zoom read through, which was a new one for me. And I've been up for several hours now. So I'm going to let you do all the talking this week.
Well, mate, I need no more introduction to do that, mate. I can talk underwater, you know that. So thank you very much. And I wish you all the best with that new role, mate. Let's fingers crossed you get it. But you better not forget about us on the Leeds United podcast, mate.
Oh, no, of course not. I'm sure I'll be able to find some time in my busy shooting schedule to accommodate the pod and yourself. Hopefully we'll have more to talk about in future weeks. It's been boring with the international break, hasn't it?
It certainly is. Do you know what it is, Matt? I hate international breaks. I hate the games. Can't stand it. I'm watching a game last night and I see it was like Portugal against Bosnia and Herzegovina. And I'm thinking 5-0 up at half time. In the second half, it was just horrendous. So, mate, I just get rid of it. Whatever.
Yeah.
Let's bring it on. I know this is going to sound a little bit dated, but I don't like the international break, mate.
The thing is, we can have them, but there's just so many of them, isn't there? I mean, like, there's another one in a month's time as well. And I just feel like, I don't know, maybe it's our fault for being too beholden for, you know, we need Leeds United every weekend as a little fix. Maybe it's our problem.
No, but at least some of the games have got grit and desire and determination, mate, and there's a lot more stuff going on and end-to-end action. I just think the international games, it's all about who can keep the ball the longest and there's not really any end product, so not having it.
Well, lucky for us, Leeds United are going to be back in action very, very soon. We'll have had the second part of our Dave Hancock interview. So Leeds will have already played Norwich by the time you hear this, and we'll have beaten Daniel Farke's old team away from home by the time you already hear this. So that's exciting.
I'm still liking the Dave one. You know, I've had a few comments on social media about people saying Dave Hancock, the man with the magic fingers. They really enjoyed it, pal. So
it's gone down well, eh?
It has. So I mean, we were on for a long time with them, probably the longest podcast we've ever done. So it's good that it's been broken up into a couple of parts. And I've had some good feedback and I shed a little tear with all the memories.
Oh, I'm not surprised, mate. No, it was brilliant. It was awesome going back over some of your old stories, ones that I've actually told, maybe ones that didn't quite make the cut that I've been retelling people personally myself. But we're going to have another guest on, aren't we, this week, to try and fill this dead air of international break. So should we get him on?
Let's get him on. Let's do some, mate. Let's welcome the new addition to Daniel Farke's backroom staff, first team goalkeeping coach Ed Wootton. Welcome to the pod, Ed.
Hello, how are you?
Very, very well.
Doing well, thank you.
Excellent.
Great to have you on.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
We normally talk a lot of the players. It's great just to have a little bit of an insight and see what goes on behind the scenes with the staff. Obviously, I've been in that environment before, but many years ago. So things have changed since I was there as the dinosaur. We had my old physio on, Dave Hancock, in the last episode, so we saw a good insight into that, and we had a good laugh and a joke about some of the pranks that we would play on him, blah, blah, blah. So, Ed, I just want to say this is probably going to go out after we've talked about the Norwich City game. So
after we've beaten Norwich, this will be going out. So
this will be going out.
We can talk about that great win.
Yeah, it was a great 3-0 win.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There you go. International break. We're chatting during the international break. It's great to have you on. I just want to know, because as a player, I used to really enjoy the international break. Now, for two reasons, Ed. One, because I never really played full internationals, so I kind of got a bit of time off and stayed back and either got time off at the club or when you went away in international duty, I found it was a lot more of a relaxed environment without the intensity of training and good to meet with the other lads. So what's it like for a staff member? Do you get a bit of time off or is it preparation? Watching the players that are out.
It's brilliant, really, to be honest, because you have the hustle and bustle of the league season that goes on, as you know, Saturday, Tuesday, all the way through. And then when you do get to the international break, it's nice to have a few days just to have a bit of downtime. So it's a nice mix, actually, to be able to have some downtime, relax for a few days. Also, as you say, the training that we have in the middle part of the international window is a little bit more relaxed and you can be a bit more specific in the work you do and have a little bit more, as I say, a relaxed environment before we refocus then, obviously, in this case for Norwich. So, yeah, it's a nice time. It's a nice time just to have some done.
So how many lads, out of curiosity, how many lads would you have, obviously we know when you've got the full squad, how many lads on internationals that are actually back at the club? Is it quite a few or is it a small number?
It's not many. I think we've had numbers of about 10 or 11. So it's not many, but the quality of the group, I have to say, is very high. So, you know, we've got players like Chris Somerville, obviously Ilan Melier, Carl Darlow, just to name but a few that are here training. So although we're small numbers, the intensity and the quality is second to none. So it's actually enjoyable to be around in that middle part just to see the lads at it and really working hard, and the quality shines through without question.
Just before we move back onto club, which is what obviously everyone's interested in, when, for example, Ilan is away with France, I mean, I know he's not at the minute, but when he usually goes with, you know, with other 21s or whatever, do you liaise with the French coaches, or are you very much separate?
No, I mean, obviously Alan's not part of the 21s currently, but in general, when we have international players, you'd get a physical report back, and with the goalkeeping coaches being a bit of a tight-knit group, you'd always have a little bit of communication and a message through, just saying this is what they've done, this is how they performed, etc. So there's loose communication without it being very specific. You don't generally go into much feedback. You kind of leave that to the international coaches to feed that back into the goalkeeper and assess what they've done whilst away. There's loose communication without it being really thorough. Yeah.
Okay.
Please, you mentioned that tight-knit group there, Matt, because you know what Ed's mentioned there.
Yeah.
It's the goalkeepers union, mate.
Absolutely.
It's like a secret society.
It is, secret handshakes,
they've got handshakes everywhere.
How's your French?
I won't lie. fortunately, Ilan's English is better than my French, so he puts me to shame in that front. There's no doubt about that.
Ed, you're new at the club, obviously. My favourite thing pre-season was seeing the lads that were coming in, who the new players were signing at the clubs. And I used to dread when you'd sign for a new club, because all I knew was the initiation of the song would be coming on. What do the club have to do? So from a player's side of point of view, we've heard a few of the lads, what Carl Dawler was talking about when he arrived. Did the staff do the same thing, mate? Did you have to do an initiation with the players or with the staff, or did you get away with it?
No, I managed to get away with that one this time around. So I've just been ducking and diving and hoping nobody brings it up. So yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up.
I'm going to do, I'm going to tag Liam Cooper in on this podcast, so the skipper can get you up to do your song. If you did have to do a song, what's your go-to, mate? What you know?
I like my Oasis and songs like that. So I actually had planned to do Only Fools and Horses. I thought that might be a nice one to do. so that was going to be my
excellent
go-to. That's the only song I can remember off the top of my head. So
just on the phone to Liam Cooper as we speak. Do you hear that?
He's a long time listener, so he'll definitely be all over that.
He's listening to that on the way to Scotland and back.
But how are you settling in the club and in Leeds in general?
Brilliant. Amazing, really, really enjoyed it. Obviously, I'd been at Norwich a long time, so hadn't moved that far up from Essex into Norwich, so the move wasn't a particularly big one at that stage of my life. But recently, obviously, coming 4 hours up the road, it is a bit of a bigger transition. But the club's just brilliant. Really impressive people around. Everyone's been very welcoming. Leeds itself, fantastic city. Been into the shops.
I can vouch for that.
Yeah, been into the shops with the missus and all what have you. So, that's already up and running and getting used to the shopping malls, etc. But, you know, to go out into the local countryside and the Yorkshire Dales is phenomenal. So really, really been impressed. And all the people, local people, have been very welcoming. You know, bump into one or two Leeds supporters around and they're just, really enthusiastic about the club, and you just get a real feel for how big the club is and what a love and a support that the fans have got for us. You know, it's incredible. Really, really, really enjoying it.
What have you seen the difference between the your training ground when you're with Norwich? Is this the scales similar to the Leeds United training ground or facilities on a par?
Yeah, without question. You know, a lot of the clubs now invest heavily into the training ground. It's where you spend the majority of your time. Clubs nowadays, you look up and down the country, everyone's really heavily investing into the training ground setup as Leeds have here. We're going to try to move it on here again to lift it towards those even higher levels if we can possibly do that. But the training ground here is sufficient and pitches are excellent. So it's been very, very good. You've been down, you've seen the pitches. They're like carpets, aren't they? You're not seeing any mud yet. Here we are. Yeah.
The guy we had on that designed that, Dave Hancock, was on the last episode of the podcast. Year before Dave arrived, and it was funny to talk to him. I've never seen a training ground, Ed, you love this, where it's designed by a physio. So the manager's office was well away from where the central hub was, and the biggest facility was the physio department and the physio's room. I ribbed him about it because he got the go ahead and the green light to design the academy there back in the day. So yeah, I've seen it in all its glory, but it's just interesting to know that he's obviously wanting to take it to the next level as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, looking after himself, was he getting nice big office?
It was bigger than, I remember the managers just coming in and say, are you kidding me, this is the physio department office.
Manager's office here looks pretty big as well, to be fair, so it's not too bad for it on that front, gotta say. So it's top draw, it's top draw facilities. I mean, can't help but enjoy coming in there every day. The food's first class. It's like you're going to a restaurant every day. So yeah, it's so I put on a little bit of weight since I've been here, I know that.
Yeah, happens to the best of us.
Talking about the manager, and you mentioned obviously that you've been at Norwich previously, so you guys were together there and now reunited at Leeds. What's that been like, coming back to work for the boss again? And I guess what's he like? What's the relationship between a goalkeeper coach and a manager?
Yeah, we just picked up from where we left off, really. Obviously spent 4.5 years together at Norwich. Since that point, manager and the staff, they went on to do one or two other bits in Germany, and to be reunited with them was, when I had the opportunity, was a no-brainer. We get on, you know, closely, so it was a real pleasure to be invited back into that group of staff. In the sense of our relationship is very positive. He allows me to get on with my work day to day. Have a firm interest within the goalkeepers, which is great, and an opinion. What I say to the goalkeepers is, you know, you get some managers, as you know, who are perhaps goalkeeper haters. He certainly doesn't fit into that category. He's actually quite sympathetic towards us now and again, but it's a balanced opinion on goalkeepers. He'll criticise when he feels it needs to be criticised, but as I say, he is sympathetic towards how difficult the position is and how important it is for the team to play and set up the play as to how he wants to do it, really.
I love it how you said there, some managers are goalkeeper here. As I remember, we had you goalkeepers used to go off into a little paddock in the far corner of the field and just
compost,
you got the
corner,
worst patch of ground ever. Exactly. So them times have changed. So you know, I mean, I'm going back when I was there, 1999-2000 through, Ed. In your career as a coach, we'll talk about where you started and how it all came about later on, but in your period, the working with Daniel Farke, you've just mentioned that he you know, you get on, you've got a good relationship with him. Does your philosophy and your goalkeeping style have to evolve around what he wants to play? And obviously he loves to play out. So are you really integrating a lot of the sessions? Does he give you the go ahead and the green light to get everybody together?
To be honest, how I would work day to day would be try to incorporate some of the philosophy and the strategy that we want to implement from a goalkeeping side of things into the team when we work as a group, as a goalkeeping group. So how we want to play out from the back, etc., and build up play and start our possession off from the back. But in terms of when the goalkeepers when work with the group, obviously that's then down to the manager and the coaching staff to then implement how they want their style of play to be evolved and the goalkeeper to play within that group. So we're in constant conversation and we analyse together as a group of staff as to how we think how anything can be developed and improved. And Obviously, then it's down to myself to try to implement anything that we need to improve from the goalkeeping side of thing to develop our play when I'm working with the goalkeepers. So, it's a case of trying to ensure that we are working alongside what the manager wants and trying to implement the style of play, really.
I was just going to say, because back in the day, I played with Nigel Martin and Paul Robinson. Now, Paul Robinson had the longest boom I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So we used that as a massive outlet. We never went through patterns of play. I remember playing out from the back, even though we had some quality players in Woodgate and Rio Ferdinand and Lucas Radebe, good ball players. So we had a need,
top
but
players.
I never remember us going through patterns of play back then, you know. So obviously, have you ever worked under, I mean, you've been with Daniel before at Norwich, you've worked with them at Leeds, it's always been playing out. When you've been coaching back in the day, have you had managers that would say, we're not playing out at all,
absolutely.
Mate, this is no risk football, we're going to just boom it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Your training strategy completely changes then, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. My roots were down in non-league, and then I was coaching at Colchester United at a lower league, obviously, so we weren't playing out from the back in those teams, that's for sure, particularly on some of the pitches.
Colchester was route one.
Yeah, absolutely. So the game slowly evolved in the last 10 or 15 years, so without doubt, it's so much more stressful for the goalkeeper now than it was 10, 15 years ago when you just put the ball down and levered the ball down the pitch. So, it's certainly come on.
What do you find that goalkeepers prefer? I mean, I imagine everyone's different, but do they enjoy being treated as almost like another centre-half, or do they just want to get rid of it as quick as possible?
I think I know what I'd prefer to do. I think now all the goalkeepers are under of the understanding that they're going to be asked to play out from the back. Very few teams now would put the ball down and lever it down the pitch. Even when you look down into League One and League Two, a lot of teams now playing a great football. Look at Notts County and teams like that in League Two, what they're doing, just to name one. But there's a few teams, well, more than a few teams, are looking to build from the back. So I think they do enjoy it secretly. They like that responsibility. That's what they're there to do. They want to be part of the team and have an influence on the game. So I think they do enjoy it. It comes with its own trouble at times, where you're giving possession away perhaps cheaply, and obviously then you're defending and give away corners, set plays, whatever it might be, and all of a sudden the team's under pressure from when you're trying to play out. So it does come with its own challenges, but I do think the goalkeepers secretly like it, because otherwise, you know, you're just apart from the team and you want to be trying to impact the game as much as you can, really.
It was funny, Ed, because when I was coaching Australia, I'd gone through all the badges, and when I was head coach of the Edgeworth Eagles over there, I said to the goalkeepers before, listen, you go and do your warm-up with your goalkeeper, but you come in, and when we start doing the possession games, yous are involved in the possession games. I want yous bouncing, I want yous involved. And you should have seen the face, and they went, what, we're coming in to have a little session, and the players were mortified. They're going, they'll just give the ball away like loads, and there was shell shock on them. But the way they developed, because the previous manager had nothing to do with that, it was launch it, and I wanted to start to get them, and you could see them slowly just getting the idea, and the confidence grew. But mate, honestly, the shit hit the fan when I said, do you want to start and join
in? Unfortunately, there's only one way to improve, and that's to get in amongst it and keep doing it. And you know, as I say, over the recent years, that those days of when goalkeepers have been separated from the team, they're probably gone now. I mean, don't get me wrong, as I've just said, that we will work separately away from the group and try and implement the manager's style of play and work on that on our own. But then once they're with the team, they're very much involved in the sessions and trying to build from the back, constantly in possession and playing out. So, you know about it when you give the ball away, that's for sure, because it normally ends up at you're making a save at the very least, on a bad day, picking it out once or twice. So, it's a lot of pressure now, a lot of pressure.
We had Ilan on the show a few weeks ago, one of the questions that we were chatting to him about was the difference in last season and this season. Obviously, I mean, we can talk about last season with Melly in a bit, but, he was, copping a lot last year, a lot of shots, a lot of goals, etc. Whereas this year, he's not had a huge amount to do. But, when he has been called on each game, he's been there. Yeah. We were talking about concentration, what do you do to keep that concentration? Is there a special training that you do? Is there a focus that you have to have so that when that moment comes up, you're ready for it? But I suppose being involved with playing out from the back, does that help in itself? Yeah. Just keep us switched on?
Yeah, when you look back and analyse the games, that you're right in saying that potentially Ilan's not had a lot to do this season from a shot-saving perspective and protecting the goal. But when you look at what he's had to do in possession, he's more often than not involved throughout the game. So that obviously right. benefits yourself in terms of concentration. Of course, those actions perhaps go a little bit unnoticed, that, you know, when he's just passing the ball to Pascal or Liam, whoever it might be, they, you know, very simple actions. But what it does do, it just, he's constantly involved in the game. So it's not like the ball's in the other half for 45 minutes and he doesn't touch it at all.
Right.
So he's having to stay completely focused to ensure that when he is called upon, that he's ready to be at his best. And of course, when you're building up all of the time, that really helps you to stay focused.
Well, this new breed of goalkeeper, Ed, is killing me, because on Champ Manager, you type in, when I'm scouting on my Champ Manager, I'm typing in like possession, how many passes have they given away, and I'm going for high-end stats. And all you get is bloody goalkeepers, because they might lose the ball once in a game, if that, but they're always just playing a million passes with a back four. So, it's killed my scouting report.
They'll have more touches now than the centre-forward will, that, you know, nowadays. It's crazy.
That's exactly what it is. Absolutely. I'm looking for a prolific goal scorer. Or a midfielder that can open doors, and on my scouting report, I just get keepers. Shambles.
We're setting up most goals. That's it. It starts from us. Don't you forget that.
Yeah, well, we're all part of the team now. I love it how it has completely changed, because, like I say, I've seen the difference in playing the game from when it was, like I say, it was mainly long ball. And then at the back end of my career, I saw this ball playing out coming to fruition. And that's one thing that I really took on board with my coaching. It's the way that the game's got to be played. And I think you get a lot more harmony inside the group as well, because you do see you keep us on a more regular basis, which is nice.
Yeah.
Now, enough about the playing. I want to know about you, man.
Yeah.
I've got to go in. How did you end up being a goalkeeping coach? Well, because I knew this was your position from an early young age. And you talked about, because what we try to do on this as well, Ed, is talk about, I got released twice, once from Newcastle, once from Middlesbrough, and I finally made it a third time at Sunderland from a young age. I went through a lot of head trauma and like, what am I going to do with me life in future? And how do you pick yourself up? So what I think is a lovely story from your point of view is, if you can talk us through when you were playing and you got obviously released from a young age and you managed to get the transition into a completely different pathway.
Yeah, I mean, probably, essentially, I was a failed footballer, really, to be honest. I gave it a real good go. I was dedicated throughout my young career. I loved it. I was training day in, day out, and I would have loved nothing more than to be a professional footballer, but probably didn't have the psychological side of things probably let me down a little bit as I was coming through. And I probably recognised at a young age that it wasn't going to happen for me as a professional footballer. That's for sure.
What do you mean by that, if you don't mind me asking, when you said the psychological side let you down?
I would still back myself to go into training today and have a good session and stand up. You know, I feel I could train well and I wouldn't look out of place, I'd like to think, in my head. No, for sure, I was fine. You know, I would perform at the level required in training, and then perhaps come a match day, pressure of the game and might get on top of me a little bit and make errors, etc. You know, you shouldn't make and you can't make. Obviously, they can lead to goals in the position that we're in. So, it just, you know, you sort of think, oh, I'm finding this difficult. I didn't find it easy, that side of things. Right. So that's really what got on top of me and held me back, without question. And I was aware of that probably at a relatively young age. So
I love your honesty.
Is what it is. You know, there's no point hiding away from it. And he said, I think it's important for everyone to, well, certainly from my side of things, to recognise that, because it is a psychologically challenging position, and you have to be sympathetic towards that. As I was coming through, as I say, I felt I was technically good enough to perform at a top level, but as I say, mentally I wasn't. So then I got let go when I was probably, 16, 17, something like that. And in the back of my head, as I'm going through what's the next part of my life looking like, even at 16 or 17, I probably thought, right, I'll go straight into coaching. It just seemed the obvious route, that if I couldn't play at the level I wanted to, I would pursue the coaching.
Anybody give you advice on that? Or was that just you, Ed, coming up with that plan?
No, not really. I think I was lucky when I was at Colchester United. There was a coach, Steve Downey, who then said, right, you're not going to be a player. why don't you come along and help with the kids? Simple as that, really. So I went down the non-league route and playing part-time football in the local non-league scene whilst coaching youngsters. And listen, I was coaching in communities, foundation, where it was going, you were going into primary schools and you were coaching of an evening. And soon that developed where I was coaching at the Centre of Excellence at Colchester United whilst playing part-time football as well. So I was constantly trying to improve my coaching with the goal of one day getting a full-time job in coaching. That materialised at Colchester through the EPPP scheme, where, you know, obviously the academy system really took off. And what was that? Perhaps 2012, maybe. I think the EPPP scheme came in, maybe earlier. The academy system really blew up then, and people were starting to take it a little bit more seriously. So I managed to then get a full-time job working every day coaching the under-18s and under-21s at Colchester United.
And you got the fire back in your belly from doing that? That gave you a good mindset and you thought, this is what I want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. It was brilliant. Day in, day out, working full-time within football. That's what I wanted to do throughout my life, really, to be honest. It's just, you can't ask for a better environment to be in, you know. It's great. So as soon as that came up, to have the opportunity to work full time, that's obviously, it was just dream come true sort of thing, really.
That aspect that you mentioned about sort of being very self-aware, that you didn't quite have the psychological attributes to be a professional, that must have actually probably put you in really good stead as a coach. I imagine you were able to either A, recognize that in youngsters, or B, nurture that mental aspect, I imagine goalkeepers, it's probably the most mentally taxing position there can be.
Yeah, you'd like to think so. I mean, as I say, you're always trying to ensure that people are in a good place mentally, for sure. That's one of the big things for me and my coaching, is just making sure people are in a good place psychologically. Everyone's got things going on off of the pitch. The games are challenging. You're going out there at Elland Road and other major stadiums where the pressure's huge for the players. And listen, I found the pressure difficult as a kid playing in goal, let alone what it's like for the boys playing in front of 50, 60,000. So, yeah, for me, it's always about making sure the person is psychologically in a good place. That's the most important thing for me. And everything else comes second to that. Is the person in a good place? And from that point, we can start to work on everything else football-wise.
I reckon the thing that when you've gone from being so young as well, going into coaching, especially in the goalkeeping industry, goalkeepers can go and play professionally. Mark Swarter went on to, I think he was 41, 42. Yeah. They find it very hard then to get into the coaching side of it, because physically the body is absolutely knackered. And they can't, or the need.
I'm getting close to that age, and I can tell you more.
No, steady on. But you see them, I see some goalkeeping coaches. I had one at Hull City. Yeah. I can't think of his name now. And his knee was hanging off from the amount of balls he was striking. Yeah. He couldn't really get around and do what he wanted to do. And it was a big decision for the manager to actually say, you know what it is, it's time for you to move on. I need some. So you're fresh face. You're still full of life. And you've, like you said, the technical side of it you got, but the mental side you didn't. So I see that. In the coaching industry, you actually tick so many boxes, because this is the most powerful and most dangerous thing that we possess in our body, and it will appear. So, mate, no wonder you've taken, because your pathway has gone, you got the opportunity professionally with Daniel, and you've just gone on the up ever since. And it's not an easy industry to get into if you haven't played professionally. So I credit you.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate as well. There's no doubt about that. I mean, obviously, you're mentioning names like that around the industry. I'm under no illusions that there's some fantastic goalkeeper coaches out there, and, you know, big names that you sort of now working alongside, and you come across week in, week out, and, you know, just I've got great admiration for those other goalkeeping coaches and ex-players out there, because they've got so much to offer the game. So it's important for sure that people don't disregard those sort of people you're mentioning there, Mark Schwarzer and players like that. I mean, they have got so much to offer the game. So it's really important that those sort of players, blimey, they need to be included as well, because that's very, very important for the game as well.
When you were sort of offered this this job at Leeds, and you sort of saw, I want to talk about Carl Darlow as well, but I just before we talk about him, I just want to just mention Melier again. Presumably you would have watched last season and games and Melier's previous games, and obviously we're not going to psychoanalyze a player who's not here, but he did mention when he was on here that he was, you know, he was low in confidence last season.
He said he was mentally drained as well, didn't he?
He did, yeah, understandably. You know, he had an awful lot of work to do. And when you're offered the job, can you see straight away? Can you look and go, right, I know what I need to do with this kid. I can see where he's struggling. I can see how I can help him.
I mean, obviously, you look back at last season, but the first thing I did before I came here was look at all goals conceded, all saves, etc., all actions, as much as I possibly could take from last season, like I did with Carl when we brought Carl in. We look as much as we possibly, or I possibly could, to gain understanding of what they've been doing in the recent months and years. So had a really good understanding of what he was doing on the pitch. For me, again going back to my earlier point, it was ensuring when the goalies come back that they're just in a good place mentally. And listen, what right. was done last season was done last season. I wasn't going to come in here and speak about last season. There's no way that I was going to come out. Oh, what did you think against whoever it was, Man United or us?
You just come in with a fresh slate and just said, this is how we're going to do it?
Yeah, no, it's a fresh slate for everybody. And I wasn't going to come in here and speak about what had gone on in the past. Listen, I said to particularly Christopher Klaassen and to Ilan, when I first met them, I'm full of admiration for what they've done. They're both only 23 years old, and they've come across from a different country where they don't know the area, with no family, different language. And to be honest, they've performed incredibly well over the last few years. For Ilan to play the amount of games he has done in the Premier League is just an incredible feat, really, for such a young player. So, yeah, just full of admiration for what they've done rather than actually sort of criticise or anything like that.
It's awkward with Melier because there's so many positives.
Yeah.
But because there was because the season went the way it went, everyone focused on the negatives. But the amount of games that he kept us in and the amount of points we actually got only because of him, you need to remind the people, or at least maybe he needs reminding, that actually he did an awful lot of good things.
I'll tell you how the conversation would have gone with Melier and Edwin if he'd sat down and said, oh, by the way, this is what you did wrong last season. This is what you did wrong last season. Because if I'm the striker and I see a new coach coming in telling me when I miss the goals, I'm going, who's this?
Yeah,
who's this?
Exactly.
Straight away. So you've got to come in with that fresh slate and the confidence.
Yeah, listen, Ilan's done so many wonderful things for the football club. I mean, listen, there's no doubt about it. Last season was a tough season for the football club. And they obviously...
For everyone.
For everybody. Absolutely. I mean, obviously, we'd come up against, when I was at Norwich in the season, Leeds managed to stay up, and so it was a challenging season that year as well. So he's had a couple of years of high pressure football where he's come through, and he'd be a much, much better player for it coming through that period. And as I said, it was important to start with a clean slate and go, right, okay, this is a new season, a fresh league, where it'll be slightly different from what you've been used to the last couple of seasons, where it's Saturday, Tuesday, and you're literally, as you know, playing games. It's very, very little time to train. So it's just about trying to get a good rhythm into the season and ensure you're able to be fresh and ready to go out and attack every game, because, you know, you play a game and then as soon as you're off the bus, you've got another game in 48 hours. So it's a very, very different challenge, the Championship, to the Premier League, but he's done great.
Is it hard to remind goalkeepers of the good stuff. Because again, with Melier, we were chatting about how if you're
they love it.
The thing is, with a striker, and we said this to him, you know, a striker misses six chances but scores one, they're a hero. Goalkeeper makes six saves but lets one in at the end, he's a villain. And is it hard to keep reminding the goalkeeper, look, forget that. Look at the great saves you made before that happened.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, there's a lot of other positive actions that that the goalkeepers will be making through the game other than a save. Obviously, for the supporters and perhaps the wider world, you know, when you're watching Match of the Day, they're not going to watch the goalkeeper passing it out from the back and go, oh, it's a terrific
pass.
Right,
right. Coming to claim the ball.
Exactly. Yeah. So that doesn't make the highlights real, unfortunately. So... yeah, obviously, when you concede a goal, you're going to analyse it and speak about things that you can do better. But equally, you'll look at the positive things that the goalkeeper will do as well. And a lot of that will be, right. As you say, coming to claim crosses, dealing with balls in behind, trying to sweep up from behind your back four, distributing the ball from the back, which is clearly a huge, huge aspect of our game. So it's really important that we are balancing out what we're analysing and ensuring that we just keep on that level playing field. Because if you're only concentrating on the goals that you're conceding, it's a very horrible world otherwise, you know.
Yeah, I imagine it's hard work.
Yeah.
Is the competition for places, Darlow's coming, obviously very experienced. Melier, like you said, still, he's got a lot of minutes and games under his belt at such a young age. So how you find the healthy competition, how you managing that rivalry between the keepers? Because it's one thing that I've always found very interesting, Ed, when I see a new striker coming into a club and I'm going, oh, hang on a minute, this is competition. You know, there's a lot of other players that I'll be sitting with in that dressing room and chatting to. Mm. The goalkeepers is a very, very tight unit. So how do you keep an eye on what's going on there to keep that what I call it, like the rivalry going, but healthy?
Yeah, so as I say, it's a very healthy group that we've got. We've got the top three, Elan, Carl, and obviously Christopher Clarkson. And then below that, we've got Harry Christie and Danny van der Hoeven, who are pushing day in, day out as well. In regards to Carl works extremely hard every day to ensure that he is pushing Elan to be in the team. But what we've got here, we've got a situation where Carl understands that whilst Elan is playing well, obviously all he can do is work hard to be ready for a scenario where Elan isn't available, or obviously Elan falls out of form. But equally, Carl is, you know, he's a astute guy. He's not going to be knocking on the manager's door after a poor game. So it's very healthy in that respect. Goalkeepers are generally... quite respectful to one another as well, that, yeah, obviously they're understanding that mistakes can happen and obviously they're waiting for an opportunity to come into the team. So Carl's in that boat at the moment, and without question's been invaluable for our group to be pushing the goalkeepers and set standards. So yeah, delighted with him at the moment, I have to say.
Well, I've had some mad goalkeepers in the past, mate, and I've had some very serious ones, but I've had some serious, like, loose cannons up here. And it, you know, sometimes the managers loved it when he's went the other end of the field, because he's like, I don't have to deal with that one today. So have you got it? Yeah, obviously the lads, is everybody, have you got any practical jokers amongst this group? Who's the serious one, and do we have a mad as a hatter one?
Unfortunately, no, we haven't got anyone too crazy. Yeah, Elan and Carl, they're the sensible ones of the group. And then we've got the workaholics underneath, the young boys, you know what, green as you like, trying to work hard every day. So
itching up the bit.
Yeah, that's it. So no, we've got a really nice group, actually. I really enjoy working day in, day out. So yeah, it's a very, very good group.
I work with a guy called Lionel Perez at Sunderland. Ed, you would have made this. Yeah. I witnessed him knock. We got a comedian at our Christmas do.
Yeah.
And the comedian had a little bit of a joke at him, and then he had a little bit of a joke at his wife. It was a private engagement. Yeah. I witnessed this guy get up and knock the comedian out, and that was the night over. So,
oh, what a guy!
If you saw Lane with his right hand hitting his own backside, you knew there was trouble coming. A man, a few words.
Yeah, what a goalie that! I used to enjoy watching him play. You know,
do you know his claim to fame is?
Go on,
and he hates it. Oh, I can't even mention the guy's name on this podcast because he played for the other ones, but he dinks a ball. into the top corner of the goal, and it's gone down as one of the greatest goals of all Premier League time. Uh-huh. And it was a he used I'm to play for Leeds United as well.
I'm aware Eric. Of him. Carry on.
And you just see Lionel there just thinking, oh my God, what's just happened? Yeah. So he hates it because he always gets on the TV for the wrong reasons because he let a goal
out. Oh, was that him, was it? Oh,
jeez. Oh, he could run around the goal, though, couldn't he?
Oh, yeah. Mate. Yeah.
Do you have any favourite goalkeepers?
Yeah, I was an Arsenal fan growing up. So obviously David Seaman was the one I used to watch week.
Right. He was at Leeds as well.
Leeds has got a great tradition of bringing the goalies through. I mean, I used to love watching the Leeds goalies back in the day. Nigel Martin, Paul Robinson's, etc.
Yeah, England's number one, Nigel was. Stuff Seaman.
What a goalie.
Unreal. England's number
what
one.
A goalie. Watching him in the Beckham yeah. documentary the other day, and he was in goal for the Greece game. They didn't actually remember that. So, what a goalie.
That's right.
What a goalkeeper. But I have to say, Schmeichel, I have to be honest, he was just a phenomenon.
Oh, you're both testing my patience here. Jeez.
As an Arsenal fan, I hated to admit it because we had Seaman at one end and then watching the big games against Man United, I just think, oh, God. I don't like to admit this, but I do quite like Peter Schmeichel. So.
Ed, you were doing so well until that point.
Yeah.
So
I
think we're going to have to end on that. We're going to have to cut you off on that one.
Ask me again.
I told you at the start, if you wake up tomorrow with cold sweats thinking, God, I shouldn't have said that, you let us know and we'll cut it out.
I know.
So I await your phone call tomorrow.
I did mention Nigel Martin though as well. So
you did.
There we go.
Yeah. I'm only joking about cutting you off, mate. I know you've got to go and do some training sessions, yeah, mate, but I just want to say thank you so much for joining us, and being so honest as well, because it's something we've touched on in the past where I was saying about some people were unbelievable training ground players and they couldn't step over that white line and into the arena and produce. And for you to open up about that, mate, the honesty there and the transition of how you made it into goalkeeping, I thank you so much, and welcome to the football club. All the best for the rest of the season, mate, and hopefully we'll interview you again next season and we can say Premier League goalkeeping coach at Leeds United. There you go, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
I mean, you keep those clean sheets coming and it's going to happen, isn't it?
It's not me keeping them, it's the goalies. So fortunately,
we're all in this together.
Absolutely. A collective clean sheet, shall we say.
There we go. That's, absolutely. Absolutely.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. Really enjoyed talking to you guys. So, hopefully, as you say, we'll do it again soon.
Thanks, Ed.
Take care. Top man. Thank you.
Have a good one, mate.
Well, Matt, how interesting was that? An insight behind the scenes from a staff member. And I really appreciate his honesty there. I know I just told him at the end there. What were your thoughts, mate?
No, it was great. I mean, I just think it's you know, maybe there's some potential kids listening to this that are trying to get into football. But even outside of football, for anyone in a professional environment, I think the idea of his honesty about not having the mental attributes, maybe a degree of imposter syndrome or whatever. I just thought that honesty was really interesting. And I think that's what everyone thinks. Everyone's going through the same kind of thing. And I just thought it was really interesting for someone to be honest and go, you know what? This is the elite level. And it takes more than just being able to kick a ball to make it at that level. And I didn't have it. But then also being able to have the forethought of turning that into a really, really successful career.
Well, that's why I'm pleased that you went further and dug deeper there when he mentioned it, because I kind of got an insight of what he meant, but he didn't really say it. So when you dug deeper, and I was like, oh, this is fantastic. Like you say, people are listening. It helps somebody find a new career pathway through what they're going through. Mate, I'm all for that kind of stuff. So if we've got somebody like that in our club, by the way, coaching, and like you were saying with Melier, what he went through last season and getting a new player and Carl Dahler, who think you're going to come as number one and fighting for the place. I'm delighted that we spoke to Ed there, because that satisfies my mental state to think what's going on behind the scenes, having somebody like him involved is going to pay dividends for the goalkeepers that are there, not only at that level, but he'll be passing that knowledge on to the other members of staff that are coaching the academy with the goalkeepers. And he's a very well-spoken man, and you don't find many goalkeepers that have gone on to have the careers in coaching that haven't actually been pros. So again, that's another massive tick for him, how he's knocked down hurdles and barriers.
I just thought the whole thing was really interesting. I thought it gives a really good insight into into the goalkeeper coaching. And it's something that I actually was talking about last year with Melly. I was quite curious about what was going on with the coaching, and I just thought that was a really great insight, and I thought he was very open and talked about Carl as well, obviously, who we've had on this show previously. I just think that, yeah, that was just really great, and I look forward to having more guests on that can give us that behind the curtain look at what goes on at Thorpe Arch.
And I know, I was surprised, mate. It's the first goalkeeper that I've seen that can actually put a good long sentence together and seem like they're really normal and down to earth, mate. Because I don't like to give the goalkeeper's units too much credit, all right? So, yeah, fair play to him. He's flying the flag. There you go.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about international football. It's gone. Whenever this goes out, will have our mighty Leeds United back playing in the Championship. So I've thoroughly enjoyed that once again, Matt. And we look forward to doing it all again on the next episode of the Leeds United podcast. So, all you listeners, thank you so much. Stay tuned, keep supporting the Mighty Whites, and me and Matt will be with you very, very soon.
Yeah.